And that's the name of this program. Welcome to the fighting side of me here on altrighttv.com and whiteresistanceradio.com. This is Paul Fromm with more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this was a good day for end the lockdown protests. For the second Saturday in a row, there were protests in at Queen's Park. That's the center of the provincial government in Toronto. Last week they attracted about 100 people. This week, 200. So double the numbers in in a week's time. CAFE, that's the Canadian Association for Free Expression, sent a goodly contingent today. And the protest came off without a hitch. I think one Antifa was there making a fool of himself, but there was no violence. People seemed to spread themselves out, and it was a decent protest. And one of the themes that people caught up with, especially as it was introduced by CAFE, last Saturday the Premier insulted those concerned citizens who came out with their message to end the boycott, end the lockdown, and he called them a bunch of yahoos, and said that they were reckless. Somehow tried to even associate them with causing death. Well, a number of the people today picked up that notion. I put out a tweet saying, I'm a Yahoo for freedom and proud of it. You want to call me names? There's nothing backwards or stupid about not wanting to lose your freedoms. Here's one of the signs. Mr. Ford, it's better to be a Yahoo than a tyrannical communist dictator. End the lockdowns now. Another sign said, Derek Sloan, he's the Conservative MP who spoke out and got a lot of abuse for it against Theresa Tam. She's the Chief Medical Officer of Health in Canada. She's been recommending all these lockdowns early on, though. In fact, up until a couple weeks ago, she was parroting the advice of the World Health Organization, which is dominated by the Communist Chinese. The Communist Chinese were the ones who covered up the coronavirus in the first place. So as recently as a couple of weeks ago, she was saying face masks didn't really work that much. They weren't the complete solution. Well, nobody would argue they're the complete solution, but they're certainly part of a solution. She was also dead set against travel restrictions. In other words, letting more people in from communist China, the source of the pandemic. That, of course, was the party line adopted by our own prime minister. We have government leaders at all levels saying, we follow the science. Well, that's a good idea. You know, follow the science. If you can determine what the science actually says. If you're looking to the WHO for the science, you're looking for an organization essentially dominated by the liars and cover-up artists. A good crowd at Queen's Park today, but that's not the only place. Right across the country in Surrey, British Columbia, 80 people. Surrey's a bedroom community of Vancouver. 80 people came out. My good friend and fellow freedom fighter Brian Rue was there. And he says it was a good and enthusiastic protest, and there were no problems. Several days ago, there was a protest in Vernon, British Columbia. That's in the Okanagan Valley. There will be a protest tomorrow in Vancouver. That will be the fourth Sunday in a row. It's becoming a bit of a tradition. All of these protests are based around end the lockdown. There was a protest earlier this week that attracted about a dozen people in Kelowna, British Columbia. Now, there may be many other protests that I'm not aware of, but if you become aware of one, please email me at paul@paulfromm.com. That's P-A-U-L at P-A-U-L-F-R-O-M-M.com. And if you can, send me a couple pictures. And we'll put this up on the cafe website. We'll put it. I'll put it up by Twitter, Gmail, email. Gmail, Facebook, Gab, VK. We're getting the word out and letting other people know what people are doing around this great dominion. And just remember this: you are not alone. Well, I was talking to a real freedom fighter here in the Okanagan this afternoon, and we're plotting some mischief for later this week. Anyway, yeah, we're kicking these ideas around, and one of the things that we focused on is the irrationality of so many of the prohibitions. Who are the vulnerable people who are dying in large numbers? Well, old folks, usually in extended care homes that have not been very good at protecting them from other viruses. There's one in Ontario that lost about 30 people out of maybe 100 a couple of years ago to an outbreak of Legionnaire's disease. Others have seen various types of the flu race through them and cause great harm and death. There are a couple of reasons. First of all, these elderly people are, in many cases, already seriously medically compromised. Low immune systems, sometimes diabetes, heart conditions, cancer, strokes, and other weaknesses, which means any further stress on the body, as in with a flu, or the coronavirus, which is a form of flu, that's sometimes enough to put them over the edge, and they die. But there's nothing new about that. The appalling conditions in many extended care facilities in Ontario, Quebec, Alberta, British Columbia, have been present for years. What may have to be done is a wholesale rethinking of these institutions. Now, in some cases, they are at the upper end, they are well run, or fairly well run. What has to be done, though, is you have to have dedicated staff. And by that, I don't mean their degree of commitment, although that may matter in some cases, but people whose job is to be at this particular home. What has been happening is that these underpaid workers may do a two-day shift at home A and a three-day shift at home B, which means they're bringing whatever might have been in home A over to home B and vice versa. It's insane. It may require temporary housing for some of the people, the patients in these extended care places. And by temporary housing, I mean it's unconscionable to have them two or three or even four to a room. The minute the virus gets in there and one has it, almost certainly the rest of the people in that room will get it or have a very good chance of getting it. Older people, and I don't mean in any way to demean anybody, but often perhaps they're not quite as careful about washing their hands, especially if they're suffering from dementia. May not be quite as clean around the bathroom as they ought to be. So the way they are currently organized, some of these extended care homes are simply stew pots for the spread of viruses. And not just the coronavirus. That will have to be addressed. Now, having said that, why can we not go to parks or beaches? Why can we not go to restaurants or pubs? And right now in British Columbia and Ontario, although I think it will relax soon in Alberta, why can't we go to a bookstore or a library or a gym? Well, you just chanted coronavirus. Well, no, wait a second. Coronavirus is a flu. Yes, we should try to guard against this flu and others. How do you do that? Well, it may require, in many cases, to try to socially distance yourself 6 feet from others as whenever you can, and frequently wash your hands. Now, neither of those are difficult, and neither of those require the complete shutdown of all sorts of facilities and businesses. With all the pain and economic hurt and, in some cases, economic disaster these policies are bringing. Focus on the vulnerable. Protect them as best we can and let the rest of the country get back to some degree of normalcy. Talk about not focusing on the problem. Well, the trust fund kid, that's the prime minister, is going to try to sneak in new regulations, which I think gun groups are going to fight through the courts. These are done through regulations rather than change the law, outlining 1,500 different makes of what are called assault rifles. Now, what's the purpose for that? Well, there was a shooting last week in Nova Scotia. A very disturbed individual went and killed 22 people. Finally ended up being shot himself. Okay, well, would banning an assault rifle rifles have stopped that? On two levels, no. Number one, he didn't use military style assault rifle. Number two, he was already breaking a number of our present gun laws. For instance, he did not have a permit to own the rifles, or apparently the handgun or handguns he had. As he didn't have a permit to own them, he didn't have a permit to carry the handguns. Okay, there's two laws he's broken. In a more general sense, it's against the law to murder people. It's against the law to commit arson. It's against the law to wound people, to injure them. So he's already breaking at least five laws. Never mind other things he probably broke. So the existing gun laws made no impression upon him. This is part of the ongoing program of our government and others to disarm the people. You know, after all, a disarmed people are far easier to control, far less likely to be able to fight back. And that's the long-range goal of the globalist would-be dictators, to disarm us. Now, there are people, and the polls show there's a substantial number of them, who welcome any gun control. And I must say, and with not an awful lot of respect, these people are at the very least short-sighted and stupid. What do they think they're getting? Well, the government will protect us. Yeah, right, you think so? Government hasn't protected you yet. Existing gun laws did not stop this fellow. We hear a lot in Toronto about gun violence. Usually it's gang violence. Now, neatly disguised in this is what type of gang violence. And where do the gangs get their guns? The guns are almost always handguns. Okay, where? Well, it's not a mystery. We know 70% or more of those guns are smuggled through Indian reservations that straddle the Canada-US border. Okay, so we know where these guns are coming from. Well, why doesn't the government do something about it? No, not pass another law. Enforce the law that's already there. Let's say, like the law about smuggling things. Well, you see, it means they have to take on another privileged group in our society, namely the Native Indians, who say they're First Nations. Well, they're not nations. They're tribes. Canada's a nation. They're not. But we indulge them in this fiction and fantasy that somehow they are more or less independent on their own territory. I'm all for self-government and so on, but they're not independent of Canadian laws. There would, of course, be some initial pushback against any efforts to try to stop the very lucrative smuggling across the borders. A crackdown could occur in several ways. You ring the reservation and no vehicle gets out without being thoroughly searched. It would require some manpower. It would require some willpower. And yes, there might be angry profiteers on the reservation who will strongly disagree and say, it's colonialism. It's their rights are being infringed. Government has to be strong enough to say, but you're not free to smuggle guns through the reservation to arm the Negro, or largely Jamaican and Somali gangs in the big cities, in places like Toronto and Pickering and Mississauga. No, it's not happening. Now, would that stop all gun smuggling? No, it wouldn't stop at all, but it would make a big dent. So what do people like Mayor John Tory and others propose? Well, they'd like to ban handguns in their respective cities. Well, what good would that do? Do you think the Jamaican and Somali gangs would suddenly say, oh my gosh darn, it is of course illegal to have a handgun for which you don't have a license, and they don't. It's illegal to carry that handgun except under most extraordinary circumstances. But gosh darn, there's this new law that the handguns will be illegal in the city of Toronto. I'm not saying there is, but that's been a proposal. Oh, well, okay, I'll give up my handgun. Do you really think that's the way it works? Well, no. Our politicians and most of our mass media won't even honestly identify the problem. They talk about gangs. Well, gangs can mean all sorts of things. A gang is a grouping of individuals for a criminal purpose, usually. And naive people may not have an idea of just who the gangs are. They may think it's, well, you know, wayward youth. The gangs are rivals, shooting each other, but mostly over drugs. So these are wayward youth. Maybe they're geographical, the East Side Boys against the West Side Boys, but that's not the case. It's various Jamaican drug gangs against each other and against Somali drug gangs. In other words, it's racial. Well, deal with it. Well, deal with it, do they? It would start by identifying it and say to the community leaders, you've got a problem. No, we've got a problem. You've got a problem. A significant section of your youth are feral, gun-toting gangsters who, frankly, don't respect human life of any sort, including people from their own community. Because guess what? Who are the major targets of this gang violence? Other Negroes. But this is where race realism has to come in. It's not racist, whatever that is, to note that most of the gangs are Jamaicans or Somalis. If you can't name the problem, how are you going to solve the problem or come anywhere near it? Anyway, we have not heard the end of this this new gun grab attempt by the Trudeau government, and this requires hard line resistance don't ever give in to these people. well, there is a great kerfuffle because of the actions by the city council of the city of Mississauga, which is the bedroom community, although it's a city of 730,000, directly west of Toronto. And a Muslim writer, but he's a bit of a dissident, named Tariq Fatah, wrote an article in the Toronto Sun denouncing a recent decision by the Toronto City Council to change the bylaws about noise creation, and they're now going to allow the Muslim mosques, of which there are a fair number, to broadcast the call for the faithful during Ramadan to come to the mosques. Now, with email and other forms of social media, there's no reason whatsoever why Muslims would be ignorant of the time for prayer. Having a muezzin or caller go up to the turret of a mosque and scream out the call for prayer. More recently, it's broadcast with loudspeakers. It goes back to a previous era. Very much a previous era where most of the population was illiterate. There were no means of easily reaching people. Tariq Fatah has called out the Mississauga City Council on this ridiculous decision. And he writes in part, almost 2 years ago, Toronto's Danforth Avenue made headlines across the world when one Faisal Hussein, who is born originally in Syria, I believe, killed two people and wounded 13 others before committing suicide. And he told an observer that he was going to be hunting for white people. Well, Danforth Avenue is again back in the news. This time it's the blaring of loudspeakers at the Medina Mosque at Danforth and Donlands. I actually know that area quite well. That's making news. The mosque has obtained permission from the city to bend its noise pollution laws and allow the loudspeakers to make the Allahu Akbar call for prayers during the Islamic month of Ramadan. And he talks about support for that coming from a Paula Fletcher. As the former leader of the Communist Party of Manitoba, one would think that Councillor Fletcher supposedly does not believe in religion, Allah or Jesus, and would qualify as a kafir or kafir. That's an infidel worthy of death in the eyes of Islamic Sharia law. Now, this is a Muslim writing this. And yes, I've known of Paula Fletcher for more than 20 years. She's a hardcore commie. And Tariq Fatah continues, however, Fletcher apparently has no such fears. Across the globe, left-wingers and communists have made common cause with Islamists. Those who believe in Islam also as a political cause and are known popularly as Sharia Bolsheviks. This was a point made at the rally in the summer in Mississauga by People's Party of Canada keynote speaker Salim Mansour, who's also a Muslim, and denounced the Islamists as they're globalists. He continues, this is Tariq Fatah, an Iranian refugee who escaped torture in the Islamic Republic of Iran, tweeted, You and your boss must be extremely pleased for emotionally torturing an Iranian refugee after 30 years in Canada. Muslims in Canada are deeply worried that opposing the use of loudspeakers for a call to prayer will be deemed an apostasy by the Canadian Islamic establishment. You see, the hooting and hollering over the loudspeaker harkens back to an age where most of the followers of Allah were illiterate. And the way to alert them that this is the time of day to come to prayer was either the muezzin making, you know, the loud voice singing out the call, or in more recent times, the loudspeakers. And that's fine for their countries. But those are no longer necessary. Tariq Fatah continues, with the mainstream Canadian media too scared to touch on the issue lest they be referred to as Islamophobic, it was the BBC's Urdu service that revealed the possible real agenda of mullahs in Toronto's mosques, some of which are operated by followers of the India-based Tablighi Jamaat, which has a secular presence in Pakistan and Bangladesh. And he, Tariq Fatah, talks about the old story about how the camel got inside the tent, first by putting a little bit of himself, the nose, and etc. Well, there was once a church on Danforth Avenue, that's what this mosque is, until 1974, became a mosque in 1975, where today plans are afoot to make the loudspeaker call to prayer a permanent reality. While the rest of us stay at home to defeat the coronavirus, others are busy working with the Sharia Bolsheviks to change our society permanently. Why does the fable of the Arab and his camel ring a bell in my ear, asks Tariq Fatah, and a good question it is. There's a petition online urging the Mississauga City Council, that's a city just west of Toronto, stop loudspeakers from blaring Allahu Akbar. This, of course, is special catering to Muslims, a special catering to radical Muslims. Tariq Fatah is a Muslim, but he's not a radical Muslim. Salim Mansur is a Muslim, but he's not a radical Muslim. So to be against this is not to hate Muslims. If they want to worship Allah or their God any way they can, that's okay. Here is a statement from Bonnie Crombie. She's the mayor of Mississauga. When I ran against her in 2014, she's really a stupid woman. She really is. But she's got all the slogans right. I remember throwing her arms in the air and saying, Mississauga is diverse. Mississauga is multicultural. multicultural. Mississauga is wonderful. Well, that's a matter of opinion. Anyway, this is a statement by Bonnie Crombie. She's the mayor of Mississauga. Anyway, she's all shocked, apparently. She says, just missing this for the moment. But there is a petition online if you would like me to send it to you. I'd be glad to just email me at paul@paulfromm.com. That's paul@paulfromm.com. I'd be glad to send you the link to this petition. Speaking out is never a bad thing. Speak up. Do I think that we'll stop it? I don't know. But I do know if you say nothing, there's no chance of stopping it. This is the time we've got to speak up and fight back, because what we are dealing with, as the sign said at Queen's Park, is a tyranny, and that's what is being imposed upon us. Rapid loss of our rights. Here's an interesting article from the Anglican Journal. The Journal is actually a newspaper, but I get it. I've never subscribed to it, but this was from actually a year ago. It says here, Indigenous people are targeted by human traffickers. Now, that's a term that has been used of late. Human traffickers usually mean one of two things. Either these people are smuggling people across the border as illegal. That meaning would not particularly apply here. The other is that that basically we used to call it pimping, you know. But with some degree of force. Anyway, the Anglican Journal says, it's a statistic that's both shocking and telling. Although First Nation, Métis, and Inuit, that's India, those are Indians. Métis, they're mixed race, mixed blood, and Eskimo. So, okay, just so we know what we're talking about. Make up less than 5% of the Canadian population. Indigenous women and girls make up 51% of all the people who are trafficked in Canada. And this is from the 2014 National Task Force on the Trafficking of Women and Girls in Canada. Now, what I have some problems with here, I don't have problems with the numbers, actually. So in other words, but what is trafficking? If it involves kidnapping and force, yeah, that's a crime. But if it means pimping, well, there's got to be, to some degree, cooperation in many, maybe not all, in many cases. Now, so that's, do the statistics back up the idea that 51% of the whores in Canada who are in some ways controlled by a pimp, as opposed to being independents, are Indians, who constitute less than 5% of the Canadian population. Is that what they're saying? Well, hard to tell. On February 22nd of 2019, Human Trafficking Awareness Day in Canada, there was this anti-violence and coercion task force for Indigenous organizations and networks. And they organized a one-day community dialogue to expand current knowledge of the exploitation and violence toward Indigenous peoples. Sounds a little bit more like a boo-hoo-hoo. Exploitation and violence. Who is doing that? Well, they don't say. Many of these prostitutes are willing. Now, it's different. I don't deny it happens that a pimp can coerce a girl or a woman into prostitution, so usually through the manipulation of their supply of drugs and sometimes emotional means as well. Anyway, there was a focus on the two-spirited LGBTQ within First Nations, Métis, Inuit communities using a client-centered trauma-informed approach. Do you see why I have so much trouble reading this garbage? It's almost incomprehensible. So anyway, this gathering that seemed to focus on the pimping out of Indian girls and women veered into a focus on the two-spirited, is the supposedly the Indian name for homosexuals. And their problems, you know, so more boo-hoo-hoo. Anyway, the report goes on to say, in a culturally safe environment, participants were able to openly discuss their experiences and offer recommendations and insights. Well, a culturally safe environment. Well, what did that mean? Like only Indians and Eskimos were there? White people need not apply? Or well, what does it all mean? People involved with missing and murdered Indigenous women pointed out that Indigenous women are deliberately targeted for sexual exploitation or trafficking, even being approached when they are simply walking to school or work. Okay, I'm going to say something pretty controversial. First of all, what exactly are they talking about here? They're targeted for sexual exploitation or trafficking. I'm not sure. What is sexual exploitation? Well, I'll tell you. Native Indian women have a reputation in Canada of being sexually quite promiscuous. Now, that's not to say all Native women are promiscuous. Of course not. But they have a reputation. And I would say relatively well-earned. Okay. So somebody approaches a Native woman who's perhaps fairly attractive and makes a proposition. Here's sexual exploitation. I'm not sure I know what that means. They assume that they're easy and perhaps will go to bed with them for a certain sum of money. Well, that's a mistake. I don't think that's exploitation. A mature person can turn to the person who makes that proposition and say, you know, buzz off, I'm not interested. So, or they can be targeted for sexual exploitation or trafficking. Well, how would you target them for trafficking? Would you say something? I mean, it probably wouldn't be quite as blatant as this, but would you like to be a prostitute? No, find your business for you. Well, if that's the case, once again, all she has to do is say, no, not interested. At least one person at that conference, this is the woman was Percy Lazard, who herself is a Native Indian, said that some Indigenous women are sex workers of their own choice and should not be lumped into the same category as those who are trafficked. It's all a little bit confusing. I think at least that is a point well worth making. Not every prostitute is forced into it. And definitely, if you're talking about coercion, coercing a person to be a prostitute or anything else, yeah, it's a problem as a society we should look at and try to deal with. Anyway, I'm back with you again tomorrow with a lot more of these issues, and I'm going to take my musical break right now, and let's see what we've got on the agenda today. Why don't we play some clips from a 1998 concert by Merle Haggard called Merle Haggard, The Working Man. And that was one of his songs, I think it was Ballad to the Working Man. This is the concert from 1998.
We are the protectors of bees.
With
bee seeds, we will change the world.
And this is the Merle Haggard concert from 1998, the Working Man concert, which includes George Jones, Alan Jackson, Emmylou Harris, Trace Adkins, Toby Keith, Tim McGraw, Winona, and numerous others as well. Hopefully we can. I do have very poor internet connection here up in the mountains of British Columbia, but I think we're about to get this though.
To him I don't know. Merle Haggard is, knows nothing about country music. I made more money than God, I'll make. And I ain't got any money. Not because I didn't earn it, because I didn't have the right people working for me. I got ripped off. So I stood out here singing and playing. Another reason for identifying with the working man.
I think after I stopped being a teenager and started dealing with raising a child on my own and earning money and getting a job, losing a job, paying rent, all those things that have to do with real life was when Merle's music really started to make some sense to me.
He's been called the working man's poet, so to speak. And in the form of song and his type of singing, I think that, you know, he does represent the working man.
And the music, it, to me, has always been about and for real people, working people, and Merle Haggard's always stood for that.
I can't imagine anybody that the working people love more than Merle Haggard.
John Anderson, Trace Adkins, and Alan Jackson, when we return.
I personally am a fan of Merle the man. If I was a singer, if I was a wrote songs, this is the way I'd like to do it. You know, this guy's, he's something, this guy. And he's just a regular person. You know, I mean, he's just one of the guys.
He has this outer shell, you know, that he, but he's not really that rougher guy, you know.
He just, all he has to do is walk into a room and you can feel the greatness.
You know, I'm not sure what makes anyone as charismatic as Merle.
I'd be drinking my own bathwater if I answered that question. I don't know.
You know, Merle's done it his way all along. He's been always been outside the circle in Nashville and outside the loop. And I think he's made the kind of music and the great music that he has made. It's been because of that, because he's been outside the loop, because he's done it his way and refused to conform.
When we're on the bus rolling down the road late at night and you get the guitar out and start singing songs, I mean, more than half of them end up being Haggard songs.
I've written over 300, about 400 songs. And they're kind of like animals. They're pretty sure. Some do good, some do better, and some wait for a long time before they do. I once told Merle, I said, man, thanks for writing all those songs. I don't know what I'd have done as a kid without having those songs to sing.
Stop by and see me.
best memory of my life, I would be afraid to try to nail it down to one. We've had different lives. Some of my favorite moments are connected with Bonnie Owens and I were married. Moments in Alaska. The lady that I'm married to now, there's moments in Lake Shasta that come to mind. Fishing nude in the moonlight with my wife. Right now, I'd like to introduce a brand new young lady who's volunteered to come out and sing some Merle Haggard music. Would you make her welcome Sarah Evans? Sarah, come on out here. What is it you'd like to do?
How about a song that was written about you?
That sounds interesting.
I think you told me this was written about you. You take me for granted.
Are you going to do that? All right. This is a song that was written by Leona Williams and a lot of people, you know, because we collaborated on different things. Have asked me over the years and said, did you write some of that song? I said, no, I wasn't even there when she wrote it. This is totally Leona's song. Do it for her.
Love to you. So
Duvall when we return.
You know, every singing over in this century has been influenced by Bing Crosby. You know, everybody, maybe they don't even know it.
If you notice, there's a beautiful, comforting resonance at the bottom end of Merle's voice. When he hits that, going where the lonely go, and it's, you know, that's Bing. You hear that?
See? Anybody in this country that ever, like me or Willie Nelson, either one, has got a lot of Bing Crosby influence, because I know that we both have that.
And you know, it's a funny thing. Bob Wills and Bing Crosby were good friends.
But I idolized Wills for his ability to lead a band, and he played great fiddle.
You know, I think with Merle, the styles that he incorporates in his music, definitely the Bob Wills influence you can tell from the Texas swing kind of thing. And Merle adds kind of the jazz flavor to what he did, to the Texas swing kind of feel.
I also idolized or liked very much Lefty Griselle's unique method of delivery.
Merle takes the best of Lefty and goes on with it to make it his own, which any artist does is to make something his own.
Everybody today is a combination of everybody they've ever listened to, and I think the same thing is with Merle. And every now and then somebody special like him comes along and is able to combine everything the knowledge and everything that they've heard around them and be able to put it into one unique sound.
Ladies and gentlemen, this gentleman is truly one of the people that I idolized all my life, and I've come to know him over the years and love him very much. Would you make welcome little Jimmy Dickens? There was a magic night up in Louisville, Kentucky one time. There had been what they call a guitar puller, and that's where people kind of pass the guitar around and they play their latest song for each other. And everybody had passed it all the way around, and this man here got up ready to leave, and I asked him, I said, why haven't you written a song here for us? He had his guitar in his case already, and he looked at me kind of funny, and he just reached down and took his guitar back out of the case, and he started off with a song that went number one for me.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness.
Well, I wrote the last half of it. He didn't have the whole thing, you see. And it was just a great song, and I said, I think I can finish it for you.
Down through the ages, men have died for their women, and now you say, so be it to mine. Each time I lost one, I've always lost one, seems the right one.
This is Paul Fromm, back with you again tomorrow at the same time on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com. I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on The Fighting Side of Me. Here on Alt-Right